Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine on the Leslie Marshall Network.
America, welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Lots of events in the news. The Indiana case has grown on its own and is now affecting Arkansas from red, slightly purple state to red, red state. This movement's growing across the country. We will remember, I argued yesterday, we will remember this day, this week, this month, as the last gasp of homophobic bigotry. It'll still exist, just like racism still exists, just like misogyny and anti-Semitism and other hatred still exist. It will exist for a long period of time. But this is the point where the American public is no longer behind it. That point in the civil rights era, you could argue, was reached in Selma with the aversion of Americans to seeing little kids blown over by fire hoses and dogs on the bridge 50 years ago. And soon after came the Civil Rights Act, and after that, attitudes, well, they slowly changed. But even though there still is intense racism throughout the country, it's not spoken of publicly. It's not praised. It's not seen as right. You'll find very few politicians actively arguing, as they used to in the Civil Rights Act, that people should have a right not to serve black people just because they're black. You don't hear that argument anymore. And this week begins the phase of American history where you will no longer hear the argument you shouldn't serve someone just because they're gay. And that's a pretty incredible thing and a pretty wonderful thing. We will mark this moment when Asa Hutchinson, the governor of Arkansas, is pressured by Walmart, hardly a liberal corporation. We all know I've condemned Walmart sharply for its wage practices, for its health care practices. Walmart, which raised its minimum wage to $9 an hour. Walmart, which has said to Arkansas, its home state, and Walmart, the company, is probably more powerful than Arkansas, the state. You've got to change this law. So we're going to see where it goes. We're going to see what the exact change is. We're going to carefully watch Governors Pence and Hutchinson to make sure that the changes don't continue to allow the discrimination. But this marks a social important moment. The other thing I think it does is it helps make Americans realize that there are no civil rights protections for gay and lesbian Americans in the majority of U.S. states. Yes, it exists in states like California, New York, most of the blue states, but it doesn't exist in most of the red states. To this day, totally apart from religion, you can fire someone just because they're gay. People think that's already against the law, actually. In fact, I think that the marriage equality movement, in many ways, people think, well, if gay people can get married, surely they can work. They can live where they want. The answer is no. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act would prohibit across the country discrimination against gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people in employment, in housing. It has not passed. In fact, it almost passed back in the 1990s, 20 years ago. It lost by one vote. It was paired with what was then the Defense of Marriage Act. The idea was, well, bigots will let gay people work as long as gay people can't get married. Well, that failed by one vote, but the anti-marriage law passed. Now that the anti-marriage law is going away, it's about time we have workplace equality. So remember this moment, because now that it's happened culturally, I have to think that politically we're not too far behind. Other stuff in the news, we've got the Iranian deal that may or may not happen. I still think it's going to happen. I may be wrong on this, though. I can't say with the certitude that I say, for example, in June, the Supreme Court will have full marriage equality across the nation. I'm pretty certain about that. But this deal with the Iranians, I still think it's going to happen. I still, if I had to bet, would bet it's going to happen. I think, though, that Iran needs it more than we do. And I think that our negotiators should remember that. the Iranian sanctions are hurting the Iranian people. They are a good idea. They're hurting the Iranian government. They're hurting the economy. And the government, which is busy fomenting revolution and conducting terrorist plots and overthrowing governments in Lebanon and attacking Israel and in Yemen and in Iraq, they want to keep doing that. And they want to keep punishing their own people who don't adhere to their theocracy. By the way, how do you like the way religious conservatives, on the one hand, complain about Iranian theocracy, complain about Al-Qaeda and ISIS theocracy, at the same time want to impose one in the United States? Isn't that an interesting hypocrisy? If you don't believe that the government should be able to impose its religious values on citizens that don't share those religious values, how can you believe that private citizens should be able to? Really, really wild stuff. But anyway, I don't know what's going to happen with Iran. I'm of the mind that if a good deal can be had, one that truly allows us to verify what Iran's doing and specifically prevents Iran from ever developing a nuclear bomb, I'm all for it. That would be fantastic. Ronald Reagan used to say, trust and verify. We have to do that and we have to be careful. But let's remember what happened in North Korea. Bill Clinton, he penned almost exactly this deal with North Korea. It was a terrific deal, actually, in the early 1990s. It brought IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, inspectors into North Korea's nuclear plants. And during the entire 1990s, North Korea did not develop a nuclear weapon. They watched them. They watched them carefully. North Korea did not proceed. But let's not forget what happened after George Bush became president. He was focused on Afghanistan. He was focused on Iraq. And the North Korean dictator saw he had his eyes off the ball. They immediately broke the agreement, which, unlike the Iranian one, wasn't limited in terms of years. It was a perpetual agreement. They just simply broke the treaty, threw out the inspectors, within a year had developed nuclear weapons, and today are the scourge of the world, and not just on the Korean Peninsula. In fact, North Korean scientists are largely expected by the experts. They think that North Korean scientists are the ones behind Iran's nuclear program. So trust and verify. If you're going to make a deal the way Bill Clinton did, you've got to watch that deal carefully, and you have to be willing to take action the moment the deal is breached. And part of my concern, even if we get a good deal with Iran, is that it won't be watched carefully. Our attention will turn elsewhere. The sanctions will go down. The Iranians will start to break that deal. And then before you know it, like North Korea, they'll have nuclear weapons. Only their nuclear weapons can be used and will be used in a very volatile Middle East that is already broken down into a massive Shia-Sunni war zone. Remember what the moderate, and moderate's important, the moderate Iranian leader, Rafsanjani, said. This was before Ahmadinejad. This is the so-called people we can deal with. These are supposedly, this guy was the reasonable guy in the Iranian government. He said that Iran, which is twice the size of Texas, could withstand a nuclear attack. But with Israel, it would just require one bomb to kill everybody, or to wipe it out, I think is the word he used. And that's true. Israel's the size of New Jersey. Probably only takes one nuclear bomb to destroy New Jersey. Country twice the size of Texas requires a lot more. So the fact that their leaders have not only contemplated privately, but publicly bragged that they could withstand a nuclear exchange should tell you that the Israeli nuclear deterrent is not enough. Iran cannot build a nuclear weapon. And if they do, I guarantee you Saudi Arabia will be next. And although Saudi Arabia is an ally, quote unquote, of the United States, I really wouldn't want them to have a nuclear weapon. I could see them, you know, them using it against Iran and in battles. We already have enough battles in the Middle East and Yemen. We have 200,000 dead in Syria. We have battles in Libya. We have ISIS in Iraq. We have Shia-Sunni wars all over the region. We don't need it to be nuclear fueled. So I'm really hoping for a good deal, President Obama. And if you can't get a good deal, then I think we should walk away. And frankly, do what we have to do to get rid of Iran's nuclear weapons. It's been done in the past. Iraq and Syria both would have had nuclear weapons if Israel had not destroyed them. The Osirak nuclear plant in 1982, which Israel destroyed, which Ronald Reagan condemned, and the Syria nuclear plant built by the Iranians in 2009, which Israel destroyed, and thank God for that too. Imagine Iraq and Syria today with the 18 militias all killing each other, 200,000 dead already, 7 million refugees. Imagine those countries if they had nuclear weapons. And whatever you think of Israel, you should be very, very glad they took out Iraq and Syria's nuclear weapons capability long before they could have been used in the current ugly civil war melee death trap that is currently Iraq and Syria. I urge you to call in about either of those topics or the third one, which I'm going to raise, probably the one that I expect most calls on, but you're welcome to call on all three. And that is Lufthansa, which knew, apparently, we now know, knew of the co-pilot, and I could say his name, but I'm really not, I don't want to make any kind of hero of this man. He's a mass murderer, whether he did it because he's mentally ill or he did it because he was an evil person. I don't believe that it really promoting his name. He probably was just mentally ill, but they knew of his bouts of depression. They knew he had suicidal tendencies. And his doctors, we now know, knew prior to him boarding that flight and locking the pilot out, knew that he was unfit to fly a plane. Apparently, under German secrecy laws, they did not have an obligation to tell anyone about it. I hope we can all agree that's wrong. I hope we can all agree that medical privacy laws are very important. Indeed, without them, a lot of people would not seek treatment. But in America, if you believe a patient, if you're a doctor or a therapist or a psychotherapist, or even a lawyer, by the way, this is an exception to attorney-client privilege. If you believe that your client, your patient, the person under your care, is at serious risk of harming him or herself or harming others, you are obligated to go to the authorities. That is American law. It's an American law I support. If the Germans had that law, I wonder if 150 lives could not have been saved. Want to know what you think, though? This is Mark Levine. Give me a call at 888-653-7543. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. Lots on the agenda to discuss. There's the Indiana bill now set to be replicated in Arkansas, but both governors backing down to a significant extent. There is the Iranian nuclear talks, which may or may not lead to an agreement. I think they still will, but it better be a good one. And there's the fact that Lufthansa apparently knew about its co-pilot's suicidal tendencies and didn't act. So if his doctors had told Lufthansa, well, would they have? These three questions and more, 888-653-7543. Stay around, even if you're talking about a different topic. I promise to get to you if you call in the next 25 minutes or so. Let's go to Norman in Ohio on line 5. Hey, Norman, how are you?
Hi. Your screener is a very polite gentleman.
Yes, they are. They're good people.
My politics are somewhat to the left of Tom Hark.
Okay.
And one of the bands that I was with played for one of Bush inaugurations.
Mm-hmm.
Money talks, and it must be nice for somebody to be able to afford to turn down work like that. I think it's ridiculous, and I'm proud of. Well, I'm not proud. I think it's. That they backed down. That economics talked to Arkansas and to Indiana, where I did my graduate work.
And we're gonna have to see, Norman. They say they're backing down, and I think they're gonna do something. But as a lawyer, I'm going to carefully examine the new proposals. I'm sure many will as well. And if they don't completely protect from religious discrimination, I guarantee you I and others are going to come back at them. But at this point, they're on the defensive, and that's a good thing. They should be.
Who was the guy that was – he became the governor of Atlanta, you know, who chased black people out of his restaurant?
The governor of Atlanta? Well, Atlanta's a city. You mean the governor of Alabama? You mean Governor George Wallace?
He owned a restaurant in Atlanta, and he didn't want to serve black people. You know, open occupancy is open occupancy. If a restaurant is open to the public, if you are doing business with the public, then you are doing business with all the public, in my opinion.
I completely agree with you, and I don't know exactly who you're referring to. But I do know.
Years ago.
Well, there is a very famous case called the Ollie's Barbecue case that went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. That guy, I believe, was in Alabama, and he didn't want to serve black people under the Civil Rights Act, and he lost. But I don't know of, in terms of Governor George Wallace of Alabama famously stood in the schoolhouse door and said, segregation now, segregation forever. And interestingly, when Alabama was forced to register black people to vote, and when black people started voting, he changed his tune. And by the he actually ran later in life, and surprisingly, won governorship later with black votes, who apparently forgave him in a way that I probably never would have. But it just shows you that as the politics change, the politicians change. They know they have to be elected. And what's fascinating is anti-gay prejudice was a great way to get elected 10 years ago. Now it's a great way to get unelected. And I would argue it's the exact same for segregation. I think that shop owners feared, many of them weren't racist, but feared allowing blacks in their stores, in their restaurants, in their hotels, because they feared that their racist customers would object. And when the Civil Rights Act came and they were forced to allow black customers in their stores, the racists knew that the store owner had nothing to do with it and then would continue to shop there. So I actually think sometimes the law helps public opinion and sometimes public opinion helps the law.
Happy Passover, happy Easter. Thank you very much.
Happy Passover, happy Easter to you. We've got Carl in Nashville on line one. Carl, we only got about a minute, but stick around. If we don't finish this conversation, we can continue it after the break. You wanted to talk about the Iran nuclear talks.
Absolutely. You know, first off, I think the most under-reported story is the fact that Israel spied on America, and not that we already know the countries spy on each other, even allies, but the fact that the Republican Party was getting information from Israel. For some reason, no one wants to stand at the top of the mountain and yell that out. I think that someone needs to pay a price for that.
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. No, I'm not.
No, Israel was. It was reported in the Wall Street Journal that Israel was spying on.
Spying on the United States. Basically, so here's what happened. Here's what my understanding of that was. Israel wanted to know what was going on in the Iranian talks so they could basically try to derail them or at least find out what was going on and argue for stronger measures. My understanding is that the State Department was actually informing Israel about the talks, not expecting that Netanyahu would then use that information and tell the Republicans to try to stop the deal. My question is, why wasn't the Justice Department informing the Republicans too? But who knows what the deal will bring. 888-653-7543. Mark Levine back after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine talking about the Indiana and then Arkansas law, talking about the Iranian negotiations, and also talking about the co-pilot and his mental illness known by Lufthansa. Carl from Nashville raised the issue of Israel spying on the American talks. So here's the information, as I understand it, from the Washington Post. They learned about the talks. It's not 100% clear to me whether this was spying in the sense of having agents, hiding in the talks. According to the Washington Post, the insider details, and this is a direct quote from the Washington Post, came from confidential briefings from U.S. officials. So, in other words, U.S., in good faith, shared with Israel details of the talks because, let's face it, the talks affect Israel. Israel's not a party to the talks. Maybe they should be, but they're not. Given that Israel's sort of the biggest threat of Iran, you know, the threat to America as well. But Israel is next door, and it clearly is the biggest threatened victim. Then what they did, and I'm sure this did not please Obama officials, is they turned over the confidential information that they got from U.S. officials and from European officials, and turned it over to the Republicans who opposed the deal. And, of course, this made President Obama very upset. But I believe that the president should be informing the opposition party about what's going on in the talks, just as, and if Democrats get upset about this, I want you to imagine President Bush in negotiations with Saddam Hussein, in negotiations with Russia, Putin, doing, you know, planning the war in Iraq. And one of the things we most hated about the plan for the war in Iraq is he didn't tell us that there were no weapons of mass destruction. He didn't let Democrats know exactly what the information was that he was basing a war on. If he had, if Democrats had known, they could have told the American people, and maybe we could have stopped that really stupid war. So I've got to be consistent. I'm a Democrat, but I got to be consistent. And I believe that when you're in sensitive negotiations with the foreign power on a deal that dramatically affects America and maybe or not whether we go to war, I think you should be informing the other party. In fact, maybe if President Obama had informed the Republicans, maybe some of them would be less critical. Now, to be fair, usually Republicans are almost always critical no matter what President Obama does, but at least he couldn't be criticized for being not transparent. So I think what Israel did, while inexcusable, at the same time, maybe I'm excusing it because I do think it's something President Obama should have done. One more thing, though, and I'll get back to Carl in a minute. I do think that Prime Minister Netanyahu, for whatever reason, is playing a constructive role. Now, that may surprise you, and I don't think it was constructive what he said about a Palestinian state or about Israeli Arabs. But when it comes to negotiations with Iran, I think President Obama is the good cop, and Prime Minister Netanyahu is a bad cop. Do you know good cop, bad cop? Many people know this. The idea is, let's say you've got a criminal, and you want to find out if the criminal did the crime, did something really awful. And you're interrogating that criminal. It's a long-time police practice. I don't think I'm giving anything away. To have a good cop and a bad cop. The good cop is nice to the suspected criminal, is very kind, offers him some water, tells him about if he just cooperates, things will be really nice and easy for him. And the bad cop comes in and says, if you don't cooperate, we're going to throw the book at you. We're going to put you in jail for life. You're going to get it. You're going to hate it. Prison's an awful place. It's a psychological trick, and it often works. And the idea is that the person trying to decide whether or not to cooperate knows that if you can't only be good cop, because then you think, well, if I only have the good cop, he's a nice guy. I could put one over on him. I don't have to give as much information as I want. But if it's only the bad cop, you don't want to satisfy the bad cop because he's a jerk. You don't want to help that bad cop get what he wants. But with the combination of good cop, bad cop, you can fear the bad cop and confess to the good cop. Again, long-time psychological strategy. Now, I do not think Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Obama planned this at all. I think it's by accident. I think Prime Minister Netanyahu is representing his countrymen who fear an Iranian attack, and he wanted to get elected, and he knows that any deal Obama approves is going to be one he doesn't like. No question about it. But I do think he plays a constructive role because President Obama and John Kerry, in tight and difficult negotiations with the Iranians right now, can say, look, if you don't give us what we want, this reasonable proposal in 15 years and a limitation on centrifuges and a one-year gap between the time that you break the deal and you develop a nuclear weapons, if you don't give us what we want, then Israel and the Republicans and Congress, they're gonna come after me, and there ain't nothing I can do about it. They're going to put sanctions on you, Iran. So don't blame me, President Obama, good cop. Blame those bad cops. So again, despite the fact that Netanyahu and Obama do not like each other or get along, I actually think it's the best chance to coming up with a good deal. All right, Carl from Nashville, you disagree?
I couldn't disagree with you more.
All right, fair enough. Tell me why.
Absolutely. Number one, it was fine. The Wall Street Journal reported that they spied on the talks between on the nuclear talks. It wasn't information that was given to them, because there were information that was given to Israel, as it should be. That wasn't the information that they passed on. The information that they passed on to the Republican Party is the information that they spied on. They spied on the Americans and on the Iranians going back home and talking. And when they did that, that's the information that they brought back. Number two,
Just for the record, Carl, I don't know what's true. Israel has denied that it came from spy.
Of course they have.
Okay. It's because U.S. apparently U.S. intelligence spied on the Israelis spying on Americans. So
of course
it goes both ways. But go ahead, make your second point.
Listen. Me fundamentally, I have no problem on countries spying on each other. But just the reality that has always been, and I'm willing.
We do it and they do it. No question about it.
Exactly. Right. But the problem that I had is them bringing information to the opposition party.
Well, let me ask you about that. Do you think? President Obama should have informed the Republicans about the details of the talks.
In a word, hell no.
Really?
This is why. This is why. Because this is different. This isn't something that we're. This isn't a loyal opposition. The Republican Party, they fundamentally hate everything about President Obama. This
True.
Is not being. This is not being a hyperbolic or anything. This is fact. They despise this human being called President Barack Obama, and they will do any. Think about it. The inauguration, January 20th, 2009. They set out pretty much a coup, a undercover. The House and the Senate had two different groups having two different meetings that night, saying what they was going to do to oppose this president. So for us to even, as a Democrat, for any Democrat to say, well, maybe he should have went to them and they would have done this. No, when are we going to stop doing that? How many times does someone have to bash you over the head before you say, enough is enough, stop hitting me?
Well, Carl, let me respond. Let me respond, because I think a lot of what you say is true, but I think you take it a little too far. There's no question.
That's the problem.
We can disagree.
You know, we keep fighting the Republican Party like they're more opposition.
Well, first of all, there's not a unified Republican Party. All right, there's John McCain and there's Ted Cruz.
They are unified in this. They're unified in their.
Well, here's one thing. Well, let me tell you where I agree with you, and then I'll tell you where I disagree. All right, I agree with you. Mitch McConnell made it very clear a month or two into the Obama presidency that he was determined to make Obama a one-term president, and that was his highest priority. That was more important to him than legislation. Rush Limbaugh.
It was Bob Corker, my wonderful senator here.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
It was guys like Eric Cantor.
Right.
It was guys like John. It was guys like.
No. I'm not saying that. I agree with you that it's throughout the Republican Party. But here's the thing. I guess depending on what the what it is. Sometimes I think as President of the United States, you got. I know you're gonna hate this. You got to take the high road. But let me be very clear. Let me be clear where I would. Hold on, Carl. Let me say it, and then you can respond. Let me be clear where I would and where I wouldn't. Okay. I would not. What to me, taking the high road does not mean compromising with progressive values. It does not mean agreeing to their, you know, tax increases on the middle class and tax cuts on the rich. It doesn't mean compromising in terms of legislation. I'll be very, very clear about that. I attacked President Obama in 2010 when he gave in to the Republicans on the whole tax thing. It doesn't mean compromising your values. But when it comes to things like information and transparency, I don't want a Republican president to argue in the future, hey, I don't have to share this information. Barack Obama didn't, or Hillary Clinton didn't. So sometimes I think
why do we keep giving these people the benefit of the doubt? Listen.
Well, no. I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt. What I'm saying is they're going to find out anyway what the contours of the deal are.
We brought in Senator Grassley, you know, during the affordable health care talk, we brought him in, brought again. All of them.
You're right, but here's the thing, Carl. You're right, but
grandma was going to be.
No, but Carl, you're right, but because Obama brought them in the health care talks, and because they refused to participate in any way, they looked bad, and the American people understood
the American people rewarded them with a landslide in 2010.
Well,
you know what?
I hear you. That's a good point.
My brother have a statement. I love my brother. My brother taught me two important things. One, Carl, the only way you'll attract a woman if you go up to her and talk to her. Thank you. I love you, Ronnie, for that.
All right.
She can always say no. That was his thing, and
mm-hmm.
then move on.
Okay.
He can't do anything but say no. Number two, my brother have a statement that he has used for years. Don't bring a gun to a machine gun fight.
Right. Don't bring it. It began as don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
No, don't bring a gun to a machine.
I understand. It goes further.
Democrats do time and time again. They underestimate the willingness of the Republican Party to be as treasonous as they.
No, but here's the thing. I don't underestimate the Republicans' will and desire to defeat President Obama, even if it means harm in America. I've talked about that all the time. I don't dispute that.
So President Obama too, and this right here is what I have a problem with. This is another part. We tend to forget history in this country, and it's very bothersome to me. Who was our allies and who was our enemies, and we tend to forget that Ronald Reagan, blessed saint that he is. Is one of the reasons why we have this terrible relationship with Iran right now when we had relationships with this country.
I don't blame Reagan for Iran. We supported the Shah of Iran back in the 1950s under Eisenhower.
I mean,
come on. Yeah. I blame Reagan for many things, particularly in domestic politics. I'm not going to blame him for our relationship with Iran. I will blame him for the Iran-Contra affair, where he sold arms to both sides. But that's not the reason why. Iran hates us because of events that happened 50 years ago.
I know that. I understand that we took out their elected leader. And
right, Mossadegh, 1952.
But see, a lot of us don't understand that, and that's the frustrating part to this whole situation. Why does the country have to continue to be our enemy?
But Carl, they don't. Look, Germany was our enemy too 70 years ago, and so was Japan, and they're some of our closest allies now. So I don't think Iran has to be a permanent enemy, but what they have to do is they have to stop going around and supporting terrorists all over the globe. And if they don't stop that, they are always going to be our enemy. And that's got nothing to do with the Shah of Iran or Ronald Reagan.
I'm in total agreement with you. They must stop sponsoring terrorists all around the country in the Middle East.
They bombed this Jewish center in Argentina, killing 100 innocent people for no reason other than being Jewish.
They were going to try and kill the ambassador of Saudi Arabia.
They probably killed the guy that was prosecuting the Argentinian bombing. So they're not exactly peaceful, love, and you know.
I'm totally aware of all that. And Germany was our mortal enemy.
Absolutely, but I'm not saying they can't become our friends. But to do so, they have to fundamentally change their pattern. And
it happens. But I'm gonna leave you with this because I've been.
Okay, then I got to go and get another caller. So real quick.
I'm gonna leave you with this right here.
All right.
Man. Stop giving the Republicans the benefit of the doubt.
You know what? I'll tell you something, Carl. I don't. It depends on the Republican. All right, it really does. I don't give Ted Cruz the benefit of the doubt, but there are Republicans that I don't want to look. I know that Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, for all their disagreements, were able to work together. And if Republicans are being reasonable, I'm not going to run away. Now, admittedly, they haven't been very reasonable lately. But I always hold out hope that one day they will be, and I'm not giving up on that possibility.
I doubt it. We just vote them out of office.
We can do that too.
Their base won't let them be reasonable.
Well, you got a point there, but it's changing. Indiana and Arkansas shows things are changing. Thanks for your call, Carl.
Thank
I appreciate
you,
it. Joe from Massachusetts, I promise I'll get to you right after the break. 888-653-7543. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Tomorrow we have a really, really terrific guest. His name is David Cooper. He's from the Economic Policy Institute. We're going to talk about minimum wage, and specifically minimum wage for people who get tips. Waiters, waitresses, hotel staff. Did you know, like I guess you do if you work in that industry, that they get only $2.13 an hour plus tips, but sometimes those tips aren't even enough to make the minimum wage, and sometimes the employers don't pay it. It's been this rate for 24 years, and it's been $2 or so for about 34 years, and we're going to talk about what that does and why that has to be raised. So do not miss tomorrow's show. This is Mark Levine. Got a couple callers on the line. Let's go to Joe in Massachusetts on line two. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm good.
I am. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you good.
Yeah, well, I'm a great fan. I listen all the time. I'm here in a kind of liberal bastion. And,
okay.
Both you and Leslie, and appreciate your encyclopedic knowledge of everything.
Well, thank you.
I don't really have a question. I have a request, and it occurred to me about an hour ago, a half hour ago, you're talking about the difference between the nuclear arsenal of Israel, which is somewhere between 90 and 100,
right,
and Iran, which only has nothing but wants one.
Right.
And the analogy you made was that, you know, you could blow up Israel with one bomb, but Iran is twice the size of Texas.
But by the way, this isn't an analogy, just so we're clear. This was an announcement by a former Iranian president. So this isn't just my speculation. This is Iranian president said.
And I thought,
right.
Okay, that's true, but Tehran is not as big as Texas.
No, Tehran could be nuked. That's true. As awful as that possibility is.
I've worried about this for a long time and wanted to bring it up, and with somebody as smart as you, it's great. That last call with Carl was the definition of good progressive talk radio. It was fantastic.
Thank you.
You both have really good points to make. But, you know, when we bombed Japan twice in 1945 with the big bombs, we didn't drop them outside the city limits to show them we could do it. We bombed the city. And if any of our enemies, well, if anybody had a bomb, they might have used it against us at that point, right then.
It's true. Although we didn't bomb, I mean, look, I'm not going to defend particularly the second atomic bomb, but at least we didn't bomb Tokyo. I mean, we weren't trying to murder as many Japanese as possible.
That's a minor point. My point is a larger one.
Uh-huh.
And it's a point for now that I'd like for you to have a little discourse on.
Okay.
And that is the fact that I consider it sword rattling and fear mongering to say they've got a bomb and they're going to use it, when in fact it's probably true we have some 2,800 of those bombs. If anybody who is nearly considered an enemy of Israel bombs Israel, they will be obliterated, size of Texas or not. And that's not brought into this conversation. In fact, you haven't done it so far. I'd like for you to bring that in more.
Well, look,
they get completely wiped out themselves.
The question is what somebody who might use a bomb would want. Obviously, anyone who cares about their own life and about their own country will never use a nuclear bomb, at least in this post-1945 world where a number of countries are armed with nuclear weapons. The concern fear is...
That's my point. But
yeah, but the fear is that the mullahs...
They want to bomb Israel. They can't do that. They just can't do it.
Well, you know, they could do it at the risk of... Well, they could do it at the risk of suicide. I mean, you know, we've just seen a pilot. We've just seen a pilot in Germany who obviously lost his life and killed 150 people at the same time.
I knew you'd get me on something. But,
well, but my point is that we have suicide bombers. We have suicide murderers. We have terrorists. What did they? People on September 11th died, and in the process took out, you know, thousands of Americans. So mutually assured destruction works if both sides fear destruction. If one side doesn't fear destruction, then I'm afraid it doesn't work, and I don't completely trust the Iranian regime controlled by Ayatollahs not to have one day an Ayatollah that prefers the afterlife rather than this life. I'm sorry we didn't have enough time. Bill from Washington, call back on Friday. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
joining you in this hour. My co-host and partner in crime, Mark Levine. I'm Leslie Marshall. And Mark, as you know, is a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. Happy Wednesday, happy hump day, happy April, and happy April Fool's Day, Mark. How are you?
Happy April Fool's Day. And no joke, Leslie, this is not a joke. I do want to thank you so much. I've really enjoyed taking over the first hour on the network, and your loyal listeners have become my loyal listeners, and it's been thrilling, and I can't wait to keep doing this. So I just want to thank you.
We're excited. I hope the guys don't do what they did to me today, locking me out of the studio and taking over the beginning.
They played man music. They felt freer to do it than 3 days with me.
Yeah, they played how great it is to be a man music instead of a woman, and it was
well, you know, I'm not going to dispute that. I mean, you know.
It takes us a lot shorter to get ready in the bathroom, you know, just because we're not as beautiful as the women. You know, we're hairy. Men are really like Seinfeld.
I love how he's backpedaling. You're reminding me of a governor in Indiana.
Oh God, that hurts. That stings.
No, you're backpedaling.
That stinks. I agree with Seinfeld. If you look at the anatomy of the body, it was that episode where his girlfriend's naked all the time. You know, I don't know if you remember that episode either, you guys. And he's like, I love it. She walks around naked, but then she was doing things like opening yogurt containers and straining. And he's like, if you look at the body, if you look at the anatomy of the male body and the male body really is disgusting.
Can I tell you something? Okay, now, Mark's a gay man. I'm a straight woman, so we're looking at the same body. And I got to say, I am a straight woman, but I do think that the female body is more attractive than
totally.
The male body. It's just because it's,
you know,
got
it
it's got its curves.
Male,
I just think it looks. I think it's aesthetically more pleasing.
Depends on the male and the female.
That's very
attractive
true.
Bodies.
Well, of course. I mean, there are males and females who aren't gonna look good no matter what. I'm just saying. Okay, let's just say. You know, I just don't. I think breasts are prettier than a penis.
I know, it's objective, but I think that, I mean, and Leslie, you're coming at this as a heterosexual woman.
Let's make some kind of a law and have a governor sign it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. My Leslie Marshall, governor of California, think because I prefer this, everyone should prefer it. And if not, they're not going to come to my business.
Oh, my God. Now, you know what I'm saying? It's like I love my husband. I love men. I think, you know, I'm hetero. I definitely don't want to be with a woman. I definitely like being with my husband, who's a man. And but I have to say, the penis is not an attractive thing to me.
and we're going off air now.
And by the way, I think guys, ladies are going to love this. Guys, this is why some women don't like to do that thing you really love.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Leslie, you're very good at taking me out of my comfort zone. But we'll go on.
So we'll take a break. Every guy go take a shower and pop a Xanax and then put a bow tie on it. You know, you might see your lady have a change of heart. Or your man. We'll be back. And we're going to talk politics for real. Don't go away. Okay, Mark, let's get down to business. The governor of Arkansas, Governor Hutchinson, today called on the state lawmakers to recall or amend the legislation billed as a religious freedom measure to make it mirror a federal version passed back in 1993. Now, you are an attorney. I am not. I have read everything up and down, and I think I understand. But what I don't fully understand, and I'm not a moron, but I don't fully understand, when you have a federal law in 1993, which I believe the Supreme Court said could not apply to the states, but you have a First Amendment. Are these laws necessary on a state-by-state basis for these business owners who own, who have state licenses state-by-state in the 50 states? Because technically or legally, don't business owners have the right to refuse business? In other words, I could refuse you business because you're gay or you're Jewish, but it's not discrimination unless you know it's because you're gay or Jewish. I mean, to split hairs here.
Okay, I got to unpack that because there's a lot there.
No one saw the need for even the federal law. For many decades, people just used the Constitution, the First Amendment, as you say. And that seems pretty clear. You can't establish a religion. You can't prohibit free exercise. And then Justice Scalia came up with this novel interpretation in the Peyote case in 1990 when Oregon tried to prevent Native Americans from practicing the religious rite that existed for centuries, if not millennia, with this hallucinogenic drug. And then Scalia tried to take away the old standard, the old legal standard, and come up with this new standard that basically allowed the government to ban drugs, even when used in a religious ceremony.
Yeah, but what I don't understand is, doesn't the first, because when I lived in Miami, Florida years ago, I remember there was a case with Santerias because they killed chickens.
Right.
And there was some PETA-type organization that went crazy. It went up to the Supreme Court, and the Santerias won based on the First Amendment.
That's
so
correct.
Why wasn't the First Amendment enough for the Native Americans who wanted to smoke peyote as part of their religious practices, because that is covered under the First Amendment, isn't it?
Because Scalia argued there's a distinction between a law intended to prohibit a religious practice, like the law that was specifically designed to stop the Santeria, and a law that had what he called a neutral principle, a law that banned all hallucinogenic drugs, he said, could still ban the ones used by Native Americans. Everyone agreed if you try to ban religious practice, you can't under the First Amendment. But Scalia argued if you have some neutral principle, you can use it even if it happens to ban a religious practice like the peyote law. In any case, that's what he argued, but the Congress disagreed and passed the original Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which protected the Native Americans' religious right. Then, as you know, the Supreme Court said it does not apply to the states, even though I think that's what Congress intended. Scalia again, messing up the law. And so then the states started doing these individual state acts. But in all cases, in the federal government and the original state acts, it only stopped the government from interfering with someone's religious practice. It had nothing to do with individuals. The difference is that Indiana then tried to allow individuals, not the government, to refuse people on the basis that they're gay. And, of course, it is legal.
And so the people understand that. Would you say in Indiana at least, and maybe in other states, this was the reason they were using this law? Because South Carolina, they're trying to use the law, one restaurant owner claiming he will not serve African Americans because it's against his religion. And, of course, we already know about in Indiana, the business owner has openly considered to say, with great backlash and losing, business, I don't know, as a business owner, the gay community buys a lot of stuff. Especially gay men, but on the whole, the LGBT community is not just a political force, but they are a consumer force that you want. You know, seriously, I want your money. I don't care if you're a Satan worshiper. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line. If you own a business, the bottom line is what you look at and how you stay in business. But do you think that the motivation and the intention of this was specifically just to try and give businesses the right to discriminate, which
Absolutely.
They cannot do.
And we know that's true because we know that Indiana specifically said it doesn't matter whether the state government's involved or not, and that took it beyond the other religious
Okay, so
laws.
That people so but let me ask you this, okay? Even if I'm a right-wing conservative Christian Bible-thumping Wigna wacko, okay? And I'm a governor of a state, Indiana Pence, for example, but and I am in that position. I know that businesses can't discriminate based on one's sexual orientation, that you cannot discriminate. That's illegal.
But they can, Leslie. The Civil Rights Act...
Because the Civil Rights Act does not extend to the LGBT community.
Exactly.
You
can't discriminate on the basis of race or religion, but you can discriminate and refuse to serve gay people.
But don't you think, if in fact there is no change in Indiana, or even in other states where there has been, that this law is in Florida, as an example, South Carolina, another... In these states that have them, that have this legislation, isn't this a slippery slope? Because if you can be – well, there are a couple of choices here. One, which I know that, many organizations have pushed for, especially in the LGBT community and elsewhere, I think the ACLU, which is amend the Civil Rights Act, right?
Well, sure. That's what the Employment Non-Discrimination Act would do, which almost passed the Congress, and actually has a majority of both House and Senate in support, but the Republicans refused to bring it up for a vote.
Okay, so that's one way around it, and you can't do that. Two, even though the Civil Rights Act does not currently include sexual orientation, you're an attorney. You can sue in this country because you don't like my perfume, for crying out loud.
But you won't win.
You're saying that somebody won't win if they are gay and say that they were not allowed to be seated at this restaurant because they were gay.
Depends on the state. In California, you will win. California specifically has protections for sexual orientation. So does the District of Columbia. So does New York State. But my home state of Virginia doesn't have those protections. Indiana, Arkansas, Arizona don't have those protections. So it depends on what state you're in as to whether
And it's not just about, let's be honest, Mark, okay? And I'm not standing on a grassy knoll, and I'm a straight woman. It is not to try and stop gay people from eating at this restaurant or renting. Obviously, that seems like the first step. Isn't it technically a nice way of saying, you don't like it, get out of our state?
Well, sure, or shut up, or be quiet, or don't be openly gay. You know, a lot of people who are homophobic really don't hate gay people so much as they hate open gayness. In other words, they were fine with their florist as long as he kept it quiet and fit a certain stereotype, but now he wants to get married, and I don't want to know that, and it's a different kind of prejudice, but I do think that a lot of it is, it's almost the First Amendment thing. They don't want people to be open about who they are.
And there are two women that have a child together that were turned away. Their child was turned away by their pediatrician because he does not support gay marriage, and therefore he would not treat their child. Is that legal?
You know, again, it depends on the state, but what an atrocious doctor, right?
Yep.
I mean, a doctor
yep.
is supposed to be caring
take a
for
Hippocrat.
Everyone.
Oh, God.
My husband's
from a Muslim family, married to a woman, me, who's half Jewish. He's brown, and his last name is Muslim in Arabic. And here's the deal. He went into the ER one day, and the guy who got shot, who he had to fix, had swastikas, had the word sand N-word, which is what my mm-hmm. husband was called growing up in Florida. Mm-hmm. Swastikas all over his body. My husband put him back together again. He doesn't feel as good about it. But he does it because that's his job, and that's the oath he took.
And that's what I think any true doctor would do.
No, exactly. So let's talk about Governor Hutchinson. First, we have to give him, I would say, even though he said he was going to sign it, you know, we have to give him a thumbs up for not signing and then backpedaling, right? Saying, bring this to me in a different, you know, version so that you're not discriminating against this community. Would you agree
on
that?
Well, he would have done it, but he saw the writing on the wall with Governor Pence, and he also had Walmart, a company that I am not inclined to praise, but when a conservative, frankly, labor-busting company like Walmart is against you, that's enough to make the governor pause. I mean, Walmart's a very large company. It's based in
There
Arkansas.
Were churches against this in Indiana.
Well, sure.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, this, and you know, Mark, you know, you said something, and I want to go back to that. You said it's not gay people, it's the PDA, public displays of affection, right? They don't want to, you know.
It's not even affection so much. I mean, it's not like kissing, although that may offend some people.
Hand-holding,
more
arm in arm.
Well, even a wedding ring, a wedding picture, this idea that these are, you know, normal families that go about their business, that seems to be what offends the homophobes most.
Really?
Of all.
See, I thought it was more the, you know, they don't like, you know, seeing it. It's weird because they'll say they don't, you know, like seeing gay people hug and kiss, but they'll be the first to whack off to two women doing each other on porn, you know, downloading porn, you know, to that effect.
I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know the stats on that. I don't know the stats on that, but I'd be willing to bet I'm right. So what becomes of the law if you take this out in Arkansas or if new legislation is put on the governor's desk in Indiana?
Well, I want to see what they write. That's why I said I'll give one cheer to them for changing their mind, but I'll give three cheers and break over the champagne if they actually do the right thing. I think they're actually caught between a rock and a hard place because the businesses don't want to discriminate because it's bad for business, and they're going to lose business. And businesses are largely what fund, big corporations fund the Republican Party. majority. On the other hand, the social religious conservatives are not going to want to back down. Their whole goal in these laws is to discriminate, and if they're not seen as being able to discriminate, then they're not going to support these people. So this is a real rift in the Republican Party between the corporate conservatives and the religious conservatives, and I don't think there's any easy way to patch it up.
Two things here. One, the Civil Rights Act, so that people understand, like you said, does not apply to sexual orientation. Is there anything else that the Civil Rights Act doesn't encompass? Because it doesn't encompass race. It doesn't encompass gender either, does it?
It does include gender, but gender is not as fully encompassed as race, national origin, and religion. People understand that there can be certain, for example, we still have men in women's bathrooms. There are still legal distinctions based on gender.
No, there are still clubs out there that are men
well,
only.
Now, clubs are different. Clubs are private. Clubs can discriminate on the basis of race. You could say, and we all know some fraternities
There's a golf country club in San Francisco. I won't say the name, that it does not have blacks or Jews still.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's perfectly legal. It's disgusting, but it's perfectly legal in a private club. Civil Rights Act only applies to businesses open to the public.
Okay, so let's take some calls. We've got a lot of talking to do, and let's start it off with Reggie in Georgia, line two. Reggie, good afternoon.
How you doing, Leslie? Happy April Fool's Day and happy hump day to you guys, too, as well.
Oh, thanks, Reggie. What's up?
Well, you have people on the right, you know, right-wing talk radio and TV like such as Dana Loesch and others, defending both Mike Pence and this law, saying that Christian-owned and run businesses have the right to discriminate against gays and lesbians at any time they want. They don't have the right to oblige or serve or service them, and they're not indentured servants or slaves to these gay and lesbian customers or patrons. And I think it's wrong, and I think that this guy should have been. How did he get elected to office in the first place anyway? I think
we have a very red. You have a very red state, you know. So he got elected with a conservative agenda. Reggie, thank you. Thank you for your call. Mark, you want to take that, right? I mean, he had a conservative agenda and a, you know, fairly conservative state, Indiana.
Sure, but Indiana, while a red state, is a red state trending purple. Let's remember that at least in the first election.
Oh, and he's just helped them to do. He's helped them to do that more so.
Well, yeah, I think what Pence and Republicans are realizing is that times are changing.
And I wanted to ask you that. That was my second question. Before I forget, because I'm going to go crazy. Does it, because you are a gay man, Mark, mm-hmm. because you're part of the LGBT community, even though you and I can have the exact same opinion on those issues, obviously not being a gay woman, it affects a lesbian woman, it affects me differently than it affects you. Does it warm your heart? What does it make you feel to see that this nation is becoming more and more tolerant by the backlash?
I think it's fantastic. I get chills. You know, I'm one of the founders of the marriage equality movement back in 1999 when no country in the world had marriage equality, and I was leading my band. We were four of us. I mean, our first protest had like 50 people, and we people thought we were crazy, including some gay members of the state legislature. To see us come around to full equality, it's people said it wouldn't happen in my lifetime, and yet it's been a mere 15 years. It's been fantastic. It's wonderful. It's all due to, frankly, the young people and future generations, because young people get it in a way that the elderly just don't. And it's a wonderful thing. And I really think this week is a watershed moment when it's so clear that the majority of Americans just want fairness. And the minority is now realizing that they're not getting their way. It kind of reminds me, today you can almost never find anyone who claims to have supported segregation in the 1960s, even though the vast majority of Southern whites did. They're not going to admit that. We're going to reach that point in this America. We're already reaching that point.
Okay. And then lastly, I mean, we have far greater things. Indiana has far greater things. Education needs improvement. The crime rate is way too high. Their economy is not good. They need to create jobs, not destroy jobs, as Pence is doing with this. You know, why do you think that, you know, this constant fight against the gay community, whether it be marriage, et cetera, is number one? You got to do it in like two sentences, my friend. I'm sorry.
I think it's ending. I think it's the last gasp of bigotry, and it's dying.